happen. The months of research turned into years, all done for my own educational goals. The consultation notes became a lecture book, the lecture notes became a handbook, the handbook became my first textbook. Now, some years later, I've written what I hope is a respected book on South African music law, contracts and business, now in its fourth edition. Will there be a fifth, you might ask? Well, I hope so. At this point, Madam Chair, I could joke that we will have to see what the final act states, particularly in regard to educational exemptions, but I will desist from doing so. Surprisingly, then music publishers and labels also started consulting me. Thereafter, collecting societies and other industry bodies, and then finally government itself. But always, without exception, whether lecturing, writing, drafting, whatever I was doing, my goal was always to side with the artist and the composer, because I am one. Over the years, I've realized one simple fact, that copyright is the key. If content is king, copyright is the emperor. As these artists consulted me over the years, I advised them wherever possible to retain their copyrights, or at least to assign their copyrights only on favorable contractual terms. Why? Because without thriving composers and performers, there is no music industry. I teach my students at the academy at which I teach how to negotiate better contracts, or if they cannot do so and they are not successful, how to go it alone in the industry, retaining their own copyright ownership. At the risk of compromising my humility, I can state honestly that I teach musicians about the value of their copyrights, the bargaining power that gives them, and how not to repeat my mistakes. I suppose...
Your colleague will be coming in when? You've spoken now for nearly 10 minutes.
I shall conclude shortly, Madam Chair. Ladies and gentlemen, when the CRC report came in, we were overjoyed. But one can only speculate how the spirit of the CRC report has been lost. A new Copyright Act does not come along every day. We have one shot at this. As author, educator, lawyer, publisher, and user, but above all as musician, I implore this committee not to reduce the rights afforded to us as creators, but to embrace this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to strengthen them. Do not reduce my or any other author's incentive for writing a book or my students' incentive for creating more music. Fair dealing is only fair if it is carefully considered and thereafter specifically legislated to be fair, and therefore clarity is the key. Freedom of expression and copyright are not mutually exclusive. It has been suggested in this room that there are in fact no authors, only creators, that the collecting societies own our copyrights and the whole South African music system is a colonial one owned by foreigners. This is simply not true. We own it as long as we own our copyrights, and we should keep it that way. The only reason why foreigners might own our creativity is because we are forced to sell it, or even worse, give it to them, as has been implied here, to use. It is indeed true that there is evil doing in our industry, and I don't need to point out where that evil doing sits. There are collecting societies that have gone insolvent as a result. You, honourable members, have the unenviable task of wading through all the information imparted to you here, and I will conclude now, Madam Chair. I implore you to have one goal in mind when you do this. Help us improve our bargaining power, not reduce it. Give us, as creators, more rights, not fewer. Give us the power to negotiate better deals by ensuring that we own our copyrights with certainty and exactitude. Without this, we will be on a slippery slope to financial oblivion. Without clear, unfettered right to own and exploit our copyrights completely, except for properly considered, fair dealing purposes, we will have nothing but unpredictability to negotiate with. It is about the bargaining power. Please don't take it away from us. Users should not be permitted to share in our copyrights without our permission, no matter what technological arguments are given, because our bargaining power will be impaired. Our copyrights are our livelihood, and we implore the legislators not to reduce them. Help us embrace the technology companies on level terms, not just on their terms. After all, they do need our creative content to thrive. Help us by putting us in a stronger negotiating position, not a weaker one. And above all, finally, please do not let South Africa become an international experiment. We deserve better than this. I thank you.
Thank you, Nick. Through you, Madam Chair, I'd like to just quickly go through our presentation, and if I may, with your allowance, also provision about 5 minutes of our presentation to allow for our colleagues from the Musicians Association to give an additional musician-centered perspective on the discussions we are about to look through. I'll skip through the introduction as we are trying to get through as many of the points as possible. But in a nutshell, CAPASSA has been in existence since 2014, and in that time, we've managed to distribute over 125 million rands worth of royalties to composers and publishers in the country. So I'd like to just go through six specific points that I'd like the committee to look through. And in addition to these 6 points, we've made written submissions, and through also our alliance partners have also made specific suggestions as to how we can improve the current legislation to meet exactly what we foresee, we feel the DTI was looking to achieve. So one of the first points is a much deliberated point in this committee, which is around Section 3 of the bill, which seeks to amend Section 5.5, subsection 2A, and that is around the funding and all the works that have been funded by specific organizations and the state belonging to the government. So under the current legislation framework, all works made under the direction or control of the state under the direction or the control of the state may be owned by the state, but specific cases are excluded from this, and this includes musical works for our purposes. And in relation to these musical works, we are able to then distribute and collect and distribute at the very least 6 million rands worth of royalties to composers, which with the addition of the word funding would completely decimate. And then this 6 million should be looked at in context of an additional 80 to 90 million, which is distributed by our sister society for exactly the same work and exactly the same usage. So commissioned works for authors, at least from a musical works perspective, is over 100 million rands worth of an industry, which with the inclusion of just the word funding would completely decimate that industry. So we urge the portfolio committee to look at this very, very carefully, and if they cannot retain the current section as is, look at alternative ways to ensure that the copyright stays with the composer such that they are able to earn for the continued exploitation of their musical works. Secondly, I'd like to then go to general exceptions, specifically looking at fair use, and a lot of discussions that have gone through already today have alluded to the fact that fair use and fair dealing can coexist, but fundamentally these two concepts are inconsistent. And there is no way in which we can then try marry the two, because one legally is a concept of general exceptions and the other is a limited exception. So in our view, we wish to allude to the fact that fair dealing in the country has worked, and in as much as it has worked, there's still very much many ways in which the arguments for fair dealing could be incorporated, for fair use could be incorporated into the current certainty of fair dealing to allow for certain things like pastiche, to allow for certain things like parody, and to also highlight just how other creative expressions could be incorporated into the very same case. And in so doing, I'd also just like to highlight another issue that was brought up earlier on, where issues like The Daily Show, for instance, in America, was used as an example that wouldn't exist in South Africa. Quite frankly, that is untrue, because even in our current fair dealing, that has not even been extended. Quotation and news purposes would allow for a show like The Daily Show to exist in South Africa, and certainly we've had similar shows that basically look at current news and comment on them. Those shows have thrived. Luis Agola's show is one of them. So there's even in our current limited fair dealing exceptions, shows like the Daily Show from Trevor Noah would actually be able to exist. So we're suggesting that if we are to extend, or if we are to argue for more flexible legislation or more flexible exception, we can do so within the current prism of fair dealing by just adding more uses that we would like to see being part of the exception. Further, I'd like to then go to the other exceptions that have been highlighted in the bill. So looking specifically at Section 11, which looks to add a new personal use exception through an addition of a new Section 12, capital A. So in light of the numerous personal uses and the numerous exceptions that are being brought on to the new current, the new bill, we'd like to argue for the introduction of a private copying levy. In so doing, this will basically allow content creators and the authors to benefit or at least limit the exploitation that the impact or the harm that they would see as a result of the extensive general personal uses exceptions that would be included in the Act. And in light of this, we'd also just like, even though it's not necessarily a case that applies in South Africa, we'd like to make reference to a UK-based judgment that basically looked at the very same concept quite recently in the UK and found that with more extended personal use exceptions, there always needs to be provision made for the harm created by those personal use exceptions through the introduction of a private copying levy. And we strongly urge the Portfolio Committee to look at the possibility of including a private copying levy in our law. And in this new bill. Fourthly, I'd like to look at orphan works under Section 22. Orphan works, essentially, our argument is that orphan works are not much of a problem for the musical works space. So it might be a problem in many other different copyright spheres, but as far as musical works are concerned, there's current ways in which we are dealing with it, which we feel we are better placed to handle orphan works and the licensing and also the ability to minimize the impact of those orphan works. So currently there's ways in which collecting societies like ourselves and our sister organizations like SAMRO, where we circulate unidentified works currently, and we circulate those unidentified works to use to copyright owners who can then make claims on them in such a way it allows for more orphan works to be in circulation and in use, and also it is a way in which we can look to identifying the current rights holders of those works. And it's a functioning system which can be improved, but at the very least it should start with the collecting societies rather than it going completely to the government department that will be in charge of regulating society. And then as a fifth point, I'd like to just quickly highlight the new section that looks to regulate collecting societies and the danger of limiting the license that the collecting societies would have. If a collecting society's license is limited to 5 years, in the fourth and the fifth year, you run the risk of having a lot of uncertainty, which would lead to new licenses that need to be negotiated not being negotiated because the users would be very afraid to sign a new contract, knowing that in the next year the collecting society might not necessarily be in existence anymore. And then, so what we propose is that instead of a limited term, you give an unlimited license, which can be revoked by the regulating authority on notice. This will allow for regulation, but not necessarily affect the licensing and monetization of works on behalf of the composers. Because in that fifth year, you run the risk of also users withholding payment on the off chance that the society will not get their license renewed. And lastly, I'd like to look at two situations where the bill missed a chance to actually sort out a lot of problems. And here I'll also link it back to the presentations we've just heard from the Broadcasting Society, the Broadcasting Corporation, Kagiso Media, in the sense that the biggest problem currently facing collecting societies is not necessarily the licensing of works, but it's in the non-reporting from broadcasting corporations and from users. Without reported usage, there is no way that a collecting society can distribute royalties accurately. So we wish to urge the committee to look at the criminalization of non-reporting, because currently the biggest problem is that they either users either under-report or fail to report at all. And with that doing, it hinders the work of the collecting society such that you get the narrative that has been tried to be, that has been pushed or shoveled in this committee, where it's said that collecting societies are not distributing, but the problem lies with users not reporting usage. And also, broadcasting corporations currently in the country are not licensed in many ways because of the current limitation of our act. They're not licensed, for instance, for mechanical reproduction for the radio usage, and that is purely based on the ephemeral exemptions that are currently in our act, which we feel should be scrapped totally, because essentially the main purpose of these ephemeral exemptions was to allow a broadcasting corporation the ability to broadcast across two different time zones. We in South Africa do not have that situation where there's a need to broadcast in two different time zones. Hence, there's no need for these ephemeral exemptions. The only purpose they serve is to justify non-licensing on the part of the users, which then prejudices composers. So at this point, I'd just like to give the remaining 5 minutes to my colleague.
3 minutes.
Chair, thank you so much for affording me again 3 minutes, as was the case on Tuesday at the end of the Copyright Alliance. My presentation was timed exactly for five, but I'm going to try and condense it to get the salient features through for the attention of the committee. Dear Chair and members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity to deliver our second segment of an 8-minute submission, the first of which was delivered as a 3-minute introduction at the end of the Copyright Alliance submission on Tuesday. The second segment of 5 minutes, which is now three, is designed to focus more on the specific clause which we, as the direct voice from within the ranks of composers and musicians, want to urge this committee to consider, reconsider, and deliberate. The music sector meeting with the President in 2009 was for us as composers and performers extremely heartening, in the sense that it gave rise to the subsequent CRC report of 2011, which, as some of its main focus points, referred to 1, the need for bringing current copyright legislation into line with the digital era, and 2, looking at a local content or the lack thereof in the framework of the economic transformation space of our newly born democracy. Now, just for a moment, kindly indulge me in briefly pondering the meaning of economic transformation when examined in the context of the cultural sector. It is important for me to point out that when engaging with the average music consumer in South Africa, it soon becomes apparent that songwriters, music composers, poets, and authors, etc., are viewed in the hearts and minds of many as nothing more than professional hobbyists. The reality, however, could not be further from the truth. The message to this committee is simple. If our music is not played, our bills don't get paid. So back to the draft bill. We naturally therefore waited with great anticipation as the first drafts of the sister bills, Copyright Amendment Bill and the Performance Protection Bill, saw the light. And the 2015 draft of the Copyright Amendment Bill was no disappointment, as we rejoiced when feasting our mostly marginalized eyes on the following clause, which was then Section 10A in the Act 1978, which was then suggested Clause 11. The following section is hereby inserted in the Principal Act after Section 10, 10A, 1. And it goes on to say, and I won't read the whole clause, but just the salient bits. The broadcasting industry is under obligation to guide the broadcasters to develop and protect the national identity, culture, character, and strengthen the social and economic fabric of the country. It went on to say that obliging the institution regulating the broadcasting industry, which we know as ICASA, to use measures to ensure compliance with the obligation to promote local programming. So I'm suggesting there was a direct link here between the regulation, between the Act itself and the broadcast authority, which was charged to dispense with such legislation. So then comes March 2016. That same institution, ICASA, whom should be obliged to use measures to ensure compliance with the obligation to promote local programming, issues guidelines of 70% for public and 35% for private commercial radio. The public broadcaster at the time was quick to object to this. This was well publicized when a certain Mr. Claudio Motsoeneng, who defiantly firmly held on to a maximum quota of 60% for his SABC. Well, imagine our surprise when a mere 2 months later, around election time, the same gentleman boldly, now in hindsight, very opportunistically announced a 90-10 split between local and bold and international content to be implemented immediately overnight on the national broadcasters' radio channels. The ones amongst us who have been campaigning for higher local content immediately heard alarm bells ringing when, on the one side, our marginalized local composers and musicians were rejoicing, singing Mr. Motsoeneng's praises, while on the other hand, a largely Americanized, westernized consumer public, especially amongst the previously and mostly still currently advanced community sectors, went into combat mode
right.
to fight the scourge of African nationalism.
I think you can use some of that in your response, because we'll be giving you 20 minutes for engagement after the next presentation.
Thank you, Chair. Much appreciated.
Right. So if we could have now the editors, are you around now, Sage? The South African Guild of Editors. If you could just swap places, thank you. Right. Straight ahead.
Okay, madam.
Who will be giving the bulk of the presentation, or will you sharing that particular process?
Because
it's got here Miss Melissa Parry.
She's our vice chair. I'm Marina Letoy. I'm Marina Letoy. I'm the chairperson of SAGE. Melissa Parry was the one who submitted this, and she's our chairperson, but she's in Johannesburg.
Well, that's useful that we have the chairperson here. Go ahead.
Okay, Madam Chair, Honourable Members, thank you so much for the opportunity to present our submission. We represent post-production professionals in the film and television industry. That means we are video editors and sound editors. We're not newspaper or magazine editors. We are run by volunteers. We are all full-time editors ourselves, and we are used to work on our own in edit suites, and we're actually not used to talk to people. So it is a little bit nerve-wracking, but we'll do our best. Thank you so much for this opportunity. The South African Guild of Editors is a key stakeholder in the film and TV industry. It is the only representative body of video and film editors, sound designers, and other post-production professionals in South Africa. The vast majority of these professionals are freelancers. SAGE has been in existence for over 20 years and aims to promote the art of visual editing. However, the South African industry lacks sufficiently skilled post-production professionals such as editors and struggles to hold on to existing post-production professionals. The apprenticeship culture of the edit suite has been completely lost as a result of shrinking budgets. This prevents the possibility of important everyday skills being transferred to assistant editors and other junior and entry-level positions. Now, when it comes to the Copyright Bill, Historically, clause 21(1)(c) has given the public broadcaster automatic ownership of copyright and all ancillary rights in a commissioned film or TV program. This prevents the exploitation of secondary and ancillary rights by independent producers. Further, it limits the remuneration and affects the time frames in which the people working on these productions are expected to deliver quality results. The new article proposes to leave this matter to the private contract. Sage feels this provision completely ignores the fact that the SABC and other broadcast corporations have considerable bargaining power over independent producers. Sage urges the Portfolio Committee to amend this article so that a fair playing field may exist for all in the content creation value chain. This means that the people who actually do the work have the power. Editors are artists. We are not crew. We are creative people with a little bit of technical skills. Currently, the editor's crucial creative role in any film or TV program is often overlooked. The role of the editor is increasingly important, not just for determining the cut and sequencing of shots, but for determining the actual content of programs. Reality TV and factual programming have considerably altered the scope of the editor's role and responsibility. In the South African context, the editors are often left to work on their own, regardless of the subject matter of the program, within a limited time frame and with limited or no input from the director and or producer. This puts a sizable amount of additional responsibility on the editor to solve creative challenges. Unscripted does not mean unwritten. The documentary editor is also the film scriptwriter, as is the reality TV editor. Even in the presence of a writer or director, the creative input from the editor is manifest, as is the editor's claim for joint authorship. The editor's creative value is significant. It often plays a key role in shaping the visual narrative and storytelling in a production. For example, an editor on a documentary may or should receive a writing or co-directing credit because of their creative contribution to the production. It is this influence an editor has over the outcome of a production which impacts the decision to work with a chosen editor or other post-production professional. Hence, in a TV or film program, the editor's input is equal to a musician or writer's creative role in the choice and arrangements of words or musical notes. In our case, a selection of shots and their sequencing. So we want recognition for editors. As an example of what kind of recognition, many European countries professionally recognize the substantial value of the editor's creative input in the creation of a production. The editor is considered to be a rights holder. Many European countries recognize the director, screenwriter, composer and some technicians, which include editors, either by law or contract, as rights holders. The stipulations on these rights vary from country to country. Some national laws specifically identify the individuals who should be considered authors. Others do not provide a hard and fast definition, but remain open to any collaborator who can demonstrate an original creative contribution. For example, Austria uses a flat percentage rate according to occupational groups to distribute funds collected on behalf of filmmakers. The percentage rate for them, for editors there, is 14%. As you can see there, directors get 54%, cameras 15%, and then costumes and production designers also get a percentage. Finland uses a sliding scale based on the amount of created input for the individual rights holder. The percentage for editors in Finland depends on the genre. So, for instance, reality TV gets 4%, drama 3%, documentaries 5%, and music videos also 5%. Another example, the sound designer is also recognized in the following categories, which include dramas, animations, documentaries, and films. Based on the above research, it can be clearly seen that editors and sound designers are professionally acknowledged and remunerated for their creative contributions to TV and film productions. The success of these types of productions depends on the creative talent, imagination and contribution the editor and sound designer bring to the collaborative process of filmmaking. And that's all from us.
Perhaps it's because you know, your skill is in editing, which perhaps you ought to share with your peer group here.
Yes.
You know, your artistic peer group, because most of them haven't got the slightest concept of a summary or succinct things, you see. So there we are, you've made your point and the time you've taken to impart that information. Now, members, we've heard both of these presentations. Now comes the opportunity for us to engage. It would have been helpful, and perhaps you did mention it, but I didn't hear that. The chairman, who's assisting you here, or who's with you?
This is Carol Hull. She is on the applications committee.
For SAGE.
For SAGE.
Applications.
Yes, when people want to join SAGE, they go through our application process.
What we would call a gatekeeper, right. So there we are. Can we please have the committee's questions, Honourable William, or comments, Honourable Esterhazen, those two so far.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm going to talk on to both presentations. Firstly, to the first presentation, I was a bit confused by you that although you've been in the industry for so many years and that you're a musician yourself, but under the previous legislation, you didn't really get the money that was due to you. And so you're not very, very happy fundamentally with the fair use clause at the moment. So I'm just wondering what changes can happen within this law that's going to benefit the actual performer or the producer of that music. If you have like a clause, we'd like to insert clause 22.1A, B and C, whatever it says, and then you can tell us what that is. And I don't mind, Chair, if we get that in writing afterwards. We don't really need it now. And secondly, basically the same thing to SAGE. I didn't pick up any concrete proposals or concrete amendments to the bill before us. And if you could sort of write down this, we propose that under clause section 22, I'm just using that as an example, that we put in another clause that says A, B, and C. And if you can bring that in writing, because I didn't get this from both of your presentations. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Williams. Honourable Esterhazen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A lot of actually what we're doing is repetition. We've been there. I'm just going through the first one. So the fair use, we've already mentioned that your work can be used freely and only a court of law can determine whether the usage is fair, and we've my opinion is not fair. The user's rights, refers to users, and it creates a perception that users are right holders themselves, and the term is also used interchangeably with other terms such as author and right holders, and it gives the impression that users can claim royalty despite the assignment of the contract. Orphan works, amendment definition of orphan works is that they are no longer a substitution of the definition of reproduction, which is of course incorrect. On the editors thing, I really think editors is a big part of any artist or creator's work, and should be rewarded accordingly, and that they should also be made space and for that, for editors. Thank you.
Honourable Esterhazen, are there any other comments or questions in this regard? Right.
to Kapasu is that, yes, there are a couple of points here. I was trying to look for the actual statement you made here with respect to that it was legally impossible to develop a hybrid between fair use and, you know, fair deal, or what is it, dealing. Do you remember who said that, fair dealing and fair use, that this was a legal impossibility? Well, I wasn't aware that lawyers ever came across an impossibility. When you came across an impossibility, you actually developed the relevant law. So nothing was is impossible with lawyers, is it? But perhaps you'd like to clarify that point for us. The personal use exceptions and private copying. You referred to a levy. You very clearly identified, it's yourself here, yes, the section 11 of the bill proposes the amendment to section 12 of the Act by introducing X and Y, and then the cautionary reference you referred to here. I think it would be, for me, quite constructive if you just expanded in that on that area, and also with respect to the orphan works, because that's come up by a number of presenters on Tuesday and again today, where you say, we therefore submit that the orphan works regime should not apply in respect of musical works. Why must music be an exception here? And I mean, I come from a very musical family, but when all is said and done, why should that be an exception to the writer, to the editor, to others, you see, to the sculptor, you know, to the photographer, to the dancer? Why should music be exempted? What informs this, please? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll hand over to my colleague to answer the bulk of your questions. I'd like to respond to the question posed to me by the Honourable Williams. Yes, indeed, I was not happy with the remuneration that I received as a performing and composing artist. However, it was not due to lack of legislation or improper legislation that was the case. It was due to my failure to understand it. Therefore, in my opinion, education is the key. As in almost all industries in South Africa, if we understand our rights properly, and if they are simplified and clarified for us, and I emphasize the word clarified, then we can educate them properly, and I'm involved in such education processes. I believe, however, that this is an opportunity for us to further improve the clarity of our acts. And I'm not only talking about the Copyright Act here, I'm also talking about its sister legislation, the Performance Protection Amendment Bill. I believe that the biggest problem in the music industry, and I've encountered this time and time again, both on the receiving end and both as a representative of artists, that we have a huge problem, and it is this. Users do not report their music usage correctly. There is simply not an ethos, an obligation, a feeling that they should report on a regular basis. Either reporting is not done, or it is done unsatisfactorily, or it is done incompletely. And therein, Honourable Member, lies the problem. If broadcasters all reported their usage, both mechanical reproductions and public performances, properly, fully, and timeously, the collecting societies would have little or no problem getting the money that they have collected to the appropriate, correct parties. This ranges not only to the hugest, biggest public broadcasters in the country, but all the way down to the club or the pub or the restaurant down the street, who may have paid his SAMRO and SAMPRA license fee, but simply does not report correctly as to what music he used. And as my colleague has indicated, we lobby for greater local content to be used. The result would be that the music will still be used, but the money will still not go to the right parties, because we do not have the information in order to distribute that money properly. This, ladies and gentlemen, is the biggest problem in the music industry today. A second response to your question would be, what can we do to make things better? Certainly that, and certainly education, which I believe should be compulsory in all tertiary education providers that come near the music and entertainment industries. But finally, as my colleague indicated in his presentation, a private copy levy, which should be imposed and is done as close to our borders as Botswana successfully, and is most certainly done in other countries in the world, would contribute massively to the distribution of more funds to composers and performers who deserve it, even if piracy continues. That would be my answer. I now hand over to my colleague for the rest.
All right. To the question around suggested wording, I'd just like to make reference to the fact that we have suggested wordings to the 2015 amendment bill. We have suggested wording in our submissions in 2016 through the NEDLAC process and in our written submissions, but I am more than happy to suggest to send specific wording again following this session. But as far as fair dealing and fair use specific wording, our contention is that you could add things like parody and prestige to the current fair dealing provisions and by so doing then allow for more flexibility without necessarily imposing a whole new concept or legal concept that needs to be done. As if you follow just for instance the statistics given by Google, America has had fair dealing for decades, yes, yet there's still at least one fair dealing case per year for the past 7 years. That is just way too much, especially for a country that actually has the jurisprudence. So if you look at South Africa, where we don't have the jurisprudence, the number of cases we are going to have is just going to be way more than we should be. So, Madam Chair, your question of whether or not fair dealing and fair use can coexist, and why a hybrid system is necessarily unachievable. So fair dealing, by definition, is very specific, limited cases. Fair use is a general exception. So anything goes, save for the three provisions, if you meet certain steps. A hybrid system, the moment you include it, you de facto have an open system. So even if you say such as, if you include the terms such as, by definition you no longer have a limited scenario, you now have a general scenario, therefore a hybrid system is actually a general system. Why music or musical works specifically should be excluded from the process. The long and short of it is because we're better at it. We have current systems that have been developed for years with current databases that are currently in use, and with the regulation of societies would actually be improved, that other, for instance, artistic works sectors just do not have. Collecting societies have currently functional mechanisms, at least in the musical workspace, that are aimed at dealing with this particular problem.
Thank you very much here. I know that you still have more to add, but let us just get the question or comment from the Honourable Kalaka, who's the whip.
Yeah. Charles, I might be confused. Sometimes I want to get a clear clarity. SAGE is a national organization. It represents all the editors or sound designers throughout the country. How transformed is SAGE? How transformed is SAGE?
Well,
my question to to the first presenter, under offense clause or section, you say musicians must be exempted. I do understand and commend your work which you have been doing in making sure that that part of in music which is not identifiable, is not identified, but is keep on playing, is there. You have done a lot of work there. But my question, you are saying collecting societies must be actually given a right to get that, to collect for that part of music. My question, what do you do with that money? You have identified that the people of who have been playing that type of music, you can't get the composers, the singers, the what, but you have identified that the music continues. So what do you do with that revenue you get as collectors, if you get it? And then can you explain to me, as you are saying here, or proposing, that this, along with the proposed regulations of collecting societies, will enable the effective management of offence works in as far as musical works are concerned? Can you explain, just so that, give us just a light of in which way are you saying that? Thirdly, lastly, do you get when you submit this, after you have done your work, to all, whether it's in broadcasting, whether it's radios, or do you get a cooperation, or do they agree with you that those monies can be paid to you as a collective society?
Honourable Kalaku, you see, I think it was about 4 or 5 years ago, it was just at the 2009, or, you know, within that period, as it were, the President had a delegation from musicians. I don't know if the DDG, Nietzsche Tinsey, will recall this. I think you were a chief director then. Because they were telling him, and then that's why we were told, well, you better sort of get this bill going for performers, especially musicians. Because they told the President then in this little engagement, which I was informed about, that, you know, it's the collecting agencies that are taking all our money. So, you know, I'm now here at a loss that we could possibly be making you in charge of all of this now. So you can imagine what's going through my own head as I recall that information I received. And each year they've been communicating with me, where is the bill that will protect us? We do know what we've written. So I don't know now, you know, you put me in a quandary. So please be more precise. It'd be useful to know which musical orphan you rescued. That's, for me, quite useful. But the other issue, the editors. You know, I'm not too sure what purpose you're actually serving. Perhaps you could explain that more specifically. My idea of editing in this field was to splice some sort of film, perhaps, you know, or are you also editing a musical score? You know, exactly what are you editing? Right.
Must I first answer?
Yeah.
Okay. Who we represent, we're open for anybody can apply. We do have an application system because we are trying to promote the art of editing. The problem with our industry is it's a very expensive industry to get into, because if you're a talented writer, you just need a pen on paper. Talented actor, you just need an audience. But for an editor, you need access to electricity. You need a very powerful computer. You need to download your software from the internet. Film schools are very important, very expensive. Even if you train yourself, you need access to the internet to watch videos. And then when you start in the industry, it's very difficult to get a good paid entry-level work. Usually people, producers appoint interns for free. They work very hard. As soon as they want more money, they just replace them with a new set of interns. So it's very difficult to become financially sustainable in this industry, and that's why it's a little bit difficult to help with transformation. We are very aware of it. In the past, or like 20, 30, 40 years ago, when you started in the industry, you were an assistant editor, but because of budgets have become much smaller, there's no money to train assistants, so that's also a problem. As for how transformed that we are, we haven't in the past actually asked people to state their race or gender. We have started this year, but it's still a process, so we haven't finished with that, but we're probably not as transformed as you would like us to be. But we are aware of it, and and as for our exec, anybody can volunteer to be on our exec. It's an unpaid position, so many people are not very keen to run the exec, but it's nothing more I can say about that, but except that we are aware of the issue. And by the way, the local production that the SABC originally proposed, that it would have been beneficial to our industry because it would have given subtitlers and people who can speak many African languages a chance to work. There would have been more job creation. Unfortunately, that didn't go so well, so the productions never materialized. Okay, here's the second question. But we get lots of footage. Sometimes if it's for a drama or a film, it was shot according to a script. If it's for reality, it's just a camera pointing and recording, then we sit and we create the story in the edit suite. So without us, there's no film, there's no drama. As for sound editors, it works the same. Music is very important in a production. And when you make a score, you need to then put the score to fit with the visuals. So that's our role. We recreate reality, actually. Everything you see, even the news, is us choosing what you are allowed to see. Yes, so we manipulate what you actually see in the end.
Well, look, I'm glad to hear you were honest enough to acknowledge you're not transformed. So what would be constructive for us is to put a little bit more about what you've just said in writing, and also accompany it with that little matrix profile. What is the racial profile? Because it sounds like you've realized you're not transformed and that it is your desire to go down that route. So let's just, before we start, using the whip, let's hear more about it. Okay. Thank you very much then. That's Mr. Toy and your colleague. Now, just to close off, I see you've been conferring there so that you get the same story. Tell us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Uniformity and certainty is important. To answer Honourable Kalako's question, I'll answer the first part and my colleague will answer the second. What happens to the money? This is the most important question in the music industry, sir. Absolutely, indeed. Now, not for one second should one forget or deny that just as there are good labels and bad labels and good publishers and bad publishers, there are also good and bad collecting societies. This is a fact. We have an embarrassing history internationally in this regard with respect to the fact that there was a music collecting society in mechanical rights, which is the space that Capasso now occupies. And that society, yes, it's an old story now, but it remains relevant nonetheless. That society was run with double accounting, and if one reads the judgment of Judge Berukowitz when that society was made insolvent, it is shocking to read what was happening in that society. The CRC report even recommended that its director should be prosecuted and so on. Yes, you're correct, sir. There are bad societies and there are good ones. And I don't believe that Africa is yet devoid of all the bad ones. But there are some good ones sitting in this room, transparent, run openly and honestly, and with open accountability to their members. And we believe that CAPASO is one of those. And you've heard representations from other organizations that are also honorable and transparent. With regard to the actual question of orphan works, which you specifically asked about, at collecting society level, this is regarded as what's known as UNDOC. UNDOC means undocumented. We do not have the information as to the owner or author or where that money belongs. So presuming that the society is paid for the use of that UNDOC work, which is a big presumption to make, the society will then hold on to it, and in terms of its rules, which must be approved by the registrar because we are going towards regulation, which, by the way, every collecting society should welcome with open arms. Regulation by the CIPC is going to be the best thing that ever happened to the creative arts. We welcome it. And that being the case, clear transparency is going to become unavoidable no matter what the level of honesty of that collecting society. And those that act dishonorably will fall by the wayside. But when money comes in for an undocumented work, what CAPASO currently does is it has a rule that we will diligently seek the owner of that work using various mechanisms, including internet research and databases that are available and so on, which my colleague will expound upon further now. We try hard for 3 years to find the owner of that money. We do not distribute that money until we've worked for 3 years. Then at the end of that 3 years, one of two things can happen. The money can be distributed to existing rights holders if the rules provide for that. And CAPASO has not got to that point yet. It is going to soon, it being 2017, because CAPASO was formed in 2014. So the 3 years is coming up on us. We have a decision to make. But other collecting societies either distribute to their existing members, which is not necessarily the correct way to go, or, as has now happened, for example, at the Sound Recording Rights Collecting Society, a social benefit fund is set up where that money is then invested because we do not know who it belongs to, and that social benefit fund then goes back into the industry to the needy performers. That is what will be in the rules, for example, of the Performers Chamber at SAMPRA. Above all, however, this takes us back to the original statement. We cannot distribute the money properly if we are not given the correct usage information by the user. And I completely support my colleague's contention made earlier that user information provided correctly is crucial and, if not done, should be criminalized as it is in other countries. If that happens, this problem will literally disappear overnight. I hand over to my colleague.
Just to add to what my chair has highlighted.
Yes, we're going to have to close all things for a moment.
Okay, so how will the regulation improve our current orphan works process? So with the fact that one of the biggest requirements from a society level to the regulator will be basically accounting on a yearly basis on what you have done. So these specific questions will be answered on a yearly basis. How many unidentified works have you identified this past year? The regulation will be able to then, collecting societies will be able to account to the regulator on a yearly basis as to how great they've done in finding orphan works or unidentified works. If they haven't, then they have the next year to be able to then right the wrongs of the past year. But with the regulation, it will just improve compliance and ensure that the diligent chase up of all these unidentified works is done on a more regular basis with more accountability to the regulator because the licensing depends on it.
Well, No, thank you very much. You can see that there, and I'm sure the committee members also appreciate this, that different points of view are coming out from yesterday. Some are sharing these points of view that were made yesterday, and others are diverging from them. And in the end, it will be up to the committee to take a position on it. For me, what is interesting is the point made by yourself, Mr. Matsoukas. You know, you indicated you are a lawyer, you're also a musician and a lecturer, in fact. But I think, and perhaps it wasn't made by you specifically, but it came out during that point as from the group, that the idea that one has to be so mechanistic and not organic, I think is a little problematic, and you may wish to look at it yourself. Because, yes, indeed, South Africa is grounded in Roman Dutch law, which is a lot more strict, if you like, tighter, and very definitional than the American legal system. And indeed, a system that the Constitution itself walked away from to a large extent. And our governing instrument today, our guiding rather than governing, is indeed our own Constitution. And we are always, we always have to take into account the fact that indeed Roman Dutch law still abounds in our country, particularly with reference to contract law, as you know. So I think what I would really like members who have already made submissions to do, and those who perhaps will come in, is to consider within what they are presenting to us, is this a mechanistic view? Is it an organic view? Is it Cartesian? What is it? Exactly where are we coming from? You see? Because I think South Africa is shifting to and is within the more organic situation rather than mechanistic, you see. So that would be very helpful, but you have contributed greatly to our understanding, I must say. Thank you very much. So we are all invited to, I understand, lunches outside, a finger lunch. And as I don't have the ability to perform miracles like the 12 loaves and fishes, I hope we can all take cognizance of the fact that there are quite a few of us, because that is exactly the amount of food available. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I can do it. This one is